Purple Heart Homes presents Putting the Pieces Back Together, a forum for veterans and the community to connect. Here are your hosts, veterans John Galena and Brad Borders.
Hey, welcome to Putting the Pieces Back Together, presented by Purple Heart Homes. And you can find out more about what we do for veterans each and every day at phhusa.org. We're joined in the fabulous new studio, fabulous new WSIC studio. This is awesome.
It is, except for I've got this cord that's like 7 miles
It's
long.
An umbilical cord.
Yeah,
you could undo it and transfer.
Yeah, it's like you're going on a spacewalk.
I know.
Right? He's tethered. He's tethered. He is tethered. Quick, cut his oxygen.
Houston, I think we have a problem.
We do definitely have a problem. So our beloved brother, Mr. Galena, is off on another secret mission, trying to acquire something for someone, I'm sure.
Oh.
Trying to do some good things for people in the world, do something good for a veteran somewhere.
Absolutely.
I'm sure of it.
You know, he's got so many secret missions because, unlike us, he actually works for a living.
Wow. I don't know what you do all day.
Speak for yourself. Yeah. Speak for yourself. I don't know if you rode around with me the rest of the day, but that's okay. You can go ahead and say you don't do anything. I'm sure there'll be a pink slip waiting on you Monday morning.
They're already aware.
Devin, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to go another direction because you evidently don't do anything. And you said it on air.
Oh man! Can we edit that out?
This is live. So there you go.
How many times have we tried to edit something out?
Well, we were successful at least once, but
we were.
But I think that's like Fight Club. You're not supposed to talk about that, right?
Don't talk about Fight Club.
But you know what we can talk about?
We can talk about our guest.
Absolutely, we can.
And then we can talk to our guest, which is even better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are talking today to Pat Scanlon. He's a financial advisor and a Nate.
You are so close. You're so close. You almost had it. You had it. So, ladies and gentlemen.
And a graduate of West Point.
There you go. Artillery officer.
Artillery officer, absolutely.
And a financial advisor for
Alex Brown / Raymond James.
Okay, there you go.
Good job, you did it, man.
That was
so pro. So what happened is I was looking at Brad's face and I completely lost it.
The glory.
It
was the glory.
He made me laugh. And so let's just get over to Pat. Pat, introduce yourself,
hey,
please.
Pat, how's it going?
Yeah. Hey guys, thanks for having me again today. I appreciate the opportunity to chime in with what's going on at Purple Heart Homes. Calling from great downtown Chicago. I do spend time in North Carolina. I have a lot of good friends there. I've been traveling those roads to Statesville and Mooresville and places like that where I have a lot of veteran friends and people I serve with. So proud to be here and look forward to the conversation with you guys.
That's awesome, man. Hey, Pat, do me a favor. Give us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, and how did the road from growing up being a kid, running around doing what kids do, to ending up at West Point, how did that matriculate?
Ooh. Yeah, sure. It's kind of like a lot of things. I think a lot of veterans end up where they end up for no particular reason or mindset other than that's what happened. So similar with me, my dad was an electrician, my mom, nurse, who grew up on the South Side, being a Sox fan. Here's my medallion, just in case you got your Cubs fans.
For those who can't see, he's got a White Sox medallion.
Yeah, I was pretty good in football. So I got a scholarship to play in high school and I got recruited in college, and all my family had served. No one was a career. My dad was a career. I was Army Air Corps. I had two cousins who were in Vietnam. One didn't come back. Bronze Star recipient from World War II. Two Navy veterans from Korea. So I'd been around veterans. Again, no one did a career. So I went as I went on to go to college. I got recruited at a number of schools and wasn't good enough to play Big Ten or places like UNC or anything in the SEC. But, you know, West Point Air Force Academy came to my doorstep and ended up going to West Point. So that was kind of like the beginning of how I became a veteran and why I served for go to a good school, play football. I did play against Marino and Doug Flutie during the 80s. So I was there 80 to 84.
Wait. What position did you play?
Outside linebacker. So I played.
Did you sack him?
Yeah. And I guess everyone in my office, my friends know this too. In 1981, Army Navy game, I think it was ABC Sports. It was Keith Jackson was calling it.
Keith Jackson.
I played outside linebacker. So the Navy had a chip shot on the five yard to kick the field goal to basically win the game, but no one blocked me, so I blocked the field goal.
No kidding.
Go Army. Wow.
Cool.
So you knew I thought I was gonna like you.
So that's my claim to fame. Three times. Only seven of them in history. But
wow, so, that is pretty impressive.
So you know, I'll do talks at high schools on career development and being a veteran, and I often mention that, you know, there's times in life like sports where you have one event comes to your life and you're not expecting it, and all of a sudden it could be a game changer. And life is often like that, as we know in the real world and as a veteran. So, but anyway, I don't want to get off track your question. You know, artillery guys can sometetes get off track.
We need
to constantly get being back to give me the coordinates. 8 digits, let us know where you want them. So I went to Ranger School after my 4 years at West Point. I got stationed on the Czech border, top secret clearance. We were part of the NATO and the Fold the Gap and all that. So it was all Cold War, pre-Gulf War service that I did with a great experience that was part of being a young soldier living in Europe and all the tremendous things about going to foreign countries. And I think there's a joke in there from Stripes, maybe. Yeah. But,
Let's not get started about Stripes.
Yeah, you go to exotic places.
It's a great story.
Yeah. So my story in service ends after 5 years of being on the Czech border in Europe. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I got hired by Boeing in Toronto. Worked there for the de Havilland division. Then I got accepted to the Booth School of Business, by the way, and applied 3 times. So those of us in this world of constant adversity, and we know from the military, when you get told no at one booth, go to the next. Mm-hmm. Ask the same question. And if they tell you no, go to the next one. So that's another story of how I got into the top business school in the country. I just didn't take no for an answer. Uh-huh. I did have to, you know, and like we all have our stories like that. So so Booth School of Business, flash forward 25 years in finance, and I'm now part of on campus at University of Chicago, board president of the Military Affairs Group at University of Chicago that serves veterans on campus and in the community.
Wow, Pat, and we're going to definitely want to hear a little bit more about that, but we're getting ready to come up on a break. So if you want to hear about what Pat's doing at the University of Chicago, just tune right back on in.
I want to hear more about that errant round he was talking about that went into Czechoslovakia.
You've been listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together. We'll be right back. We're back. You're listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together. We've got a great guest for you, Pat Scanlon. And Brad's over here making googly eyes at me. I don't know what's happening. He's like, are you going to start talking sometimes?
I'm doing my best to try to make you laugh. So.
Well, that's not really very hard.
My favorite part about the show is when you're introducing our guests and then forget who they are.
He
doesn't forget anything. He looks at you and he can't get the words to come out. He hasn't forgotten.
I think I need to like start wearing like those dark glasses where I can't actually see.
Like these?
Yeah.
All right. How's that? Is that better?
I mean, that's not helping me.
Oh, I thought, okay.
For those of you who can't see, Brad is now wearing the glasses.
Well, you asked me to put them on.
I didn't.
Okay.
No one
back.
Did. You know what? You know who doesn't wear glasses?
Back.
That's Pat Scanlon. Hey, Pat.
At least right now. But Devin, we all know that the VA has paperwork on you, and that's the most important thing.
That's right. And several three-letter agencies as well.
That's true. Yeah, Pat, you were telling us a little bit about your time at West Point. Hey, you got a funny story from where you told us about the time you were a superhero in the Army-Navy game, and you and you single-handedly defeated Navy with a blocked field goal. Is there a ridiculous cadet story that you can remember from your time at West Point? Something that somebody did that just sticks out in your memory? You went, wow.
How long is that question, Brad?
Yeah,
you're starting to get a little context to it.
Brad, there's so much material there. Now, isn't there a quote from Willy Wonka? We have so much time, so little to do. Wait, stop, reverse that.
Something that's right. That yes.
Yeah. The time at West Point is like a time of being in a meat grinder. The academics are so brutal, and then playing football, and everything else. There's a lot of little accolades. I mean, one of the things that we did for pure entertainment was. And I think it was part of the 80s where you could take an orange and launch it across a academic building into another area where someone else might be walking through unbeknownst and have an orange land near them. So sometimes we didn't have too much going on campus. We didn't have bars and things like that. So we had to come up with some creative things.
The orange hits somebody?
Yeah. Well, the idea was to kind of get near them, but and we never found out what it did or didn't do. But that might be one that kind
of
comes to
mind. Was that sort of a precursor to your career as an artilleryman?
Yeah, indirect fire. Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
God's plan. I had a mission in life, and that's I think
indirect,
you're right. Yeah.
Indirect
Thank
oranges.
Thank you for clarifying that for me.
Well,
I never knew why I became an artillery guy.
That's all we do here is connect the dots and put the pieces back together.
Wow.
I feel better about myself
That's pretty good.
How about your time on the Czech border? Did something silly happen while you were there?
No, nothing that I could talk about, of course.
Right.
The most interesting things that were going on in Europe, though, in that time, you might remember there was a lot of terrorists. Events that were happening not only in the Berlin Disco, the Red Army faction. So there was bombings in Greece. They were in Spain, the Munich and Frankfurt airports. So there was a lot of that going on. And oddly enough, another thing. I think it was 1987. That thing called Chernobyl. Mm-hmm. I remember them saying like, "Don't worry. The wind is blowing that direction."
Wow.
And, you just go about your day. So that did happen. But there's movies about it now. And I think I'm okay. I think I'm fine. I have all my faculties, as they say. with the Czech border and the Fulda Gap, and even though having a top secret clearance and all that, it was a war that, a Cold War that really nothing happened of consequence, thankfully. So.
Yeah, but it was serious business, each and every day, I'm sure. I mean, because you were getting, intel about, enemy or, opposing forces that were doing what they were doing, and you guys were having to react to all of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, and, there's soldiers are people, they're families, they have things going on, and when we get alerted, I think we got alerted every Thanksgiving morning for 3 years, and when you roll out for a couple of weeks, I was an married or anything, so I was just a single guy. But a lot of people had families and things. So those are changes that people have to do. And not everybody likes to live in a foreign land. It's a phenomenal experience for me. It was a chance of a lifetime. But those are things that a lot of soldiers have to deal with. And we have things about PTSD now. Yep. That happened during absolutely. Conflict. There's also other challenges that happened even during peacetime too.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the thing? Every Thanksgiving, what's that about?
Well, you might remember the anniversary of the Tet Offensive happened I think it was the New Year, right?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, I can't
so
remember.
So there's correlations in history with things happening on holidays. So mm-hmm. I think the whole Thanksgiving rollout when we were there and our unit was in Nuremberg was kind of correlated with that. So I don't know. The government does things they want to do when they want to do them, and then you got to do what you got to do.
Yep, you salute and say roger that.
You guys all know that line.
Oh yeah, yes, sure. Oh yes.
So coming out of the military, you were I guess you came out. Did you come out as a captain?
Yes, captain.
And so then it was that point you went back to school, and you were telling us about Boot School of Business, right? Which is kind of the premier business school in the United States. Can you tell our audience just a little bit about, why is that and what's the history behind the Boot School of Business?
Yeah, it's a good question. So it's a private institution. It was endowed by Rockefeller 1890s, and it became an establishment that was known as kind of the Ivy League of the Midwest. So there's been Nobel laureates for decades, especially in the School of Economics and other parts of the institution. So it became a great minds university that over the decades created a great reputation for research. Oddly enough, though, and after the first Heisman Trophy recipient was honored, I think it was in 1933, possibly, the university had decided that that sports and other activities were a distraction to academia. So
really?
The ROTC program was canceled shortly after World War I, and sports were canceled for a time period. So flash forward, University of Chicago over a century has been a top school, and it became even more prominent after, like in the 70s and the 80s. Again, the research there and the endowment that's behind it was all part of that. So flash forward to the 80s and 90s when every soldier who was departing the service was told really the way to breach the gap, go to a top business school. Mm-hmm. And so University of Chicago was one of those, and you had to have the GMAT and the grades. And there were ways to get in through some other things, but you really had to have the grades. Took the GMAT three times, was denied two times, applied the third time, and I got in.
Wow.
So I'd moved away from home. I'd been away from home 10 years at that point. So to come back to Chicago and be part of that program was great.
Is it an MBA program? It's an MBA?
Yeah, MBA, yeah. And wow. It was called the GSB then. Now it's called Booth by basis of money that's endowed to that program, the MBA program, yes.
Okay.
And today it's one of the top veteran universities in America. USA Today, I don't know if they're still doing it, but they were regularly posting veteran institutions across America. It was like every three or six months. So the Booth School or the University of Chicago in aggregate had been voted one of the top veteran universities in the country.
That's really interesting. I know that like SunTrust Bank and some of the other big banks were recruiting directly with folks that I served with coming out. They were, you know, they were captains, and when I was at Fort LeBrag or Fort Liberty, you know.
And LeBrag.
But they didn't require them to have an MBA to come work for them. They had this transition program where they would hire. I mean, it was an investment banking program. So you're talking about going from coming out of a military, you know, maybe you're a captain making, you know, 80 grand a year, going to investment banking where you're looking at multiple six figures multiplied four or five times over. And then what they would do is that they would recruit them out and then send them to as an MBA and send them to school while they were working there, right? It's a really interesting program. So all of that, and that's just been relatively recently, you know, so.
Yeah, and to your point, that's recently. And I will tell you, in the 90s, being a veteran was a question mark when you interviewed. You would show up and as I did, and they read your resume. What does that mean? You were a lieutenant, now you're a captain. What does that mean? How does that?
Hey, we're gonna have to put a pin in it right there. You have been listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together. We'll catch you right after this break.
Putting the Pieces Back Together, presented by Purple Heart Homes. Somehow, my mic was not doing what it was supposed to do, and then it did it, and then it blew everybody's eardrums out. That was fantastic.
I know how Brad and John and Tammy feel now.
That was incredible.
My ears just exploded.
You have empathy now. You have empathy. You're very empathetic. That's where you feel for another human being.
Right. Where you can actually put yourself in their shoes.
You did.
I had sympathy for you before.
Right. But now you have
but
empathy.
But now I have empathy.
Now you know.
And speaking of empathy, we have our friend Pat Scanlon on the show today.
I'm not sure if that was such a great
segue. I don't know, but it's a good segue. We are feeling that we have Pat Scanlon on the show today. I feel his presence, even though he's in Chicago.
Yeah.
Pat, save us from this. I don't know where this is going. Well,
so Pat has been joining us.
I'm not sure where to jump in here.
Yeah, there you go. Pat's been joining us the whole show. It's been a great show so far. Pat's a West Point grad. Served in the Army after going to West Point as an artillery officer, and got out and went to Boot School of Business, and now he is part of the Raymond James Organization, right? Which is financial planning. Raymond James has their name on Raymond James has his name on a lot of things.
Yeah,
like some stadiums. Mm-hmm. There's some stadiums that has his name on it. Mm-hmm. So do you hang out with Mr. James? Does he hang out? He's like the office across from you?
It's nationwide in all major cities. I do hang around with a lot of our fellow veterans. From the veteran standpoint, we have a group. It's called VFAN, Veterans for Financial Advisors. There's six of us nationwide on that board. And also the group under the umbrella organization called Valor. Valor is kind of the more or less from a standpoint of when we look to recruit veterans to the organization who might join in any part of the group, whether it's in the financial side or maybe in the operations side. Tampa is very close, as you guys both know, to a Special Ops Command. Mm-hmm. So we have a very, very cool cyber room, by the way.
Oh,
really?
If any of you are ever in the Tampa area and you want me to come and meet you, the cyber room on the Tampa headquarters is very cool, and it's very topical, as we all know what's going on in that space. So, yeah, little shout out to my veteran folks all in Tampa.
That is really cool. So, yeah, and bring our listeners up to speed on what the veterans program is all about within your company.
Yeah, so it's and thanks. Yeah, so like a lot of organizations, the veteran program came about over some years, and going back to the conversation in the 90s where it was questioned, and what does that mean you were a veteran? What does that mean you served in the infantry? There's the societal standpoint on the veteran, I think, has ramped up. There's more visibility on what the veteran world is all about. And it's more prominent, not only in companies, but at the university or at the University of Chicago, where I'm board president. So the awareness of the veteran became part of all the other affinity groups. Like, women's has been around probably the longest, you might say. They have a lot further to go. All these groups have more work to do. But the veteran world was kind of came about, I would say, in my opinion, about 7 or 8 years ago. And a lot of the organizations in the country are doing it. As it relates to Raymond James, we have groups where if a veteran, for example, this happened this week, someone at University of Chicago, 20-year service, has a master's already, is thinking about getting a further degree, is interested in coming into finance, and not sure where he wants to end up. So at Raymond James, I think at other companies too across the nation, there are veteran entities that are there to receive that veteran and find a place for him or her to have a process where other veterans in the organization can evaluate and assist to see if there is a fit for him in the organization. And so that's one of the things that we do, where I can, when I run into someone like this, I can submit them to our committee in Tampa, and the process can get rolling like that.
So y'all help them go into, find the right billet for them, so
right.
To speak.
Very nice.
Yeah.
To put it in military terms.
When you're job searching at any company, it's kind of a black hole. And nowadays, more so, where everything is electronic and the face fronting aspects of the career search process has become more arm's length, which makes it trickier unless you know somebody. So veterans at companies where there's a veteran recipient group now know somebody,
yep.
And in a lot of cases that can facilitate and expedite a process.
What do veterans bring to the table? I mean, obviously, you know, if you come out and you got a, you know, you've been an artillery dude or an infantry guy, right? And
yeah.
and then you're making that transition, is like, hey, come work at Raymond James, and we do finance, right?
They're kings of the financial battlefield.
Yeah, and why? Yeah. What is it about veterans that makes them attractive as far as being potential employees?
Yeah, good question, and it applies, I think, in a broader scheme too for employment in many arenas. What do people look for when they're hiring? They look for character. They look for integrity. They look for values. They look for things that they can see upon somebody as part of their team. They're looking for people that they can rely on, people who know what the term suck it up means, people who know that there is a 1+1=3 utility when you have veterans. The combined arms operation mentality, these are the attributes, in my opinion, that bring the veteran to a table where he or she can fit into any puzzle. For all of us that have served like you guys, that is one of the things that is bestowed upon us, to be thrown into something, figure it out. I've always said the key of a veteran that can do this, you show up to someone's house, they're about to have 100 people walk into a party and their cabinets are falling off the wall. A veteran can figure out the situation, how to Band-Aid it, at least to get the party going, you know?
Right.
So we can.
Yeah.
We have ways. We've been in those situations where it's mayhem. We got limited time to get it done. So all companies are looking for people like this.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And so y'all just figure out how to put that skill set to a practical use in the financial world. Is that right?
Yeah, and I paraphrase it this way. We look for, and I think all companies do this again, that we look to see what the skills of person A or B are, where they might match up with, accordingly to the different jobs that are out there in the arena of, in this example, Raymond James. So I think that's part of any standard hiring process. You look where there's gaps and where people like this, people of character, integrity, values, and people want to have fun too. You know,
yeah.
where you work 8 hours, you got to be able to joke around like you guys do, and be able to have pass time and still have fun, get the job done, and make things better.
Yeah, got it. Yeah, that's fantastic. So we've got a couple minutes before we're going to go to our final break of the show, but when you think about this question, you know, many of the veterans that are coming into the workforce now, you know, served in combat, you know, either Iraq or Afghanistan, and maybe they spent 10, 15 years, you know, in the military, and their military experiences were defined by a lot of trauma. And is the business world cognizant of that? And we got a minute before break, and I just want you to think about that question. From y'all's perspective, as you look at these veterans coming in, or is that something that you plan for? And you go, hey, you know, we're hiring people that are very bright and got a lot going for them, but they've been through a lot, right? And we need to make the rest of our team aware of that. Is that, just think about that for a second and maybe how you would respond to that. And we'll come back after break and address that. And then maybe hear more about your daughters on TikTok when we come back, because evidently they're TikTok experts.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. That's what I hear. So, we'll do that. We're going to be right back after this break. We're going to hear from our sponsors because they're fantastic. If you want to find out more about Purple Heart Homes, go to phhusa.org. We'll see you in just a few.
The pieces back together with your host Brad Borders and me, Devil Dog Devin, because John Galena is yet again on a secret mission.
Dun dun dun,
which he will never tell us about. So
it's all right.
It's okay.
It's okay. But
we do have Pat Scanlon.
Yes, we do.
And he's way more entertaining.
He's way more entertaining than us. So
yeah.
Pat Scanlon
I'd rather be funny than entertaining, though, so I'm working on that.
That's right. So, yeah, Pat's a West Point grad, artillery officer, now works at with Raymond James as a financial planner and does a lot of work with veterans in their company, and we've been chatting with him about that. And the question that I asked prior to the break is that a lot of the veterans that maybe they're hiring now come with a lot of baggage, maybe from their time in service after maybe 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 combat deployments. And how does a civilian organization like Raymond James kind of take, look at that? And is there some awareness that those are the kind of folks that are coming in, albeit bright and high performers, but maybe coming in with some damage done to them by what the country asked them to do?
Yes, yeah, and it's a big thing. It's a great question, and it's an ongoing process. I think with what's going on in our society, I think the data still is 17 self-inflict every day. And at University of Chicago, we do a march every Memorial Day for that. That's a 17 miles, which is back basically from campus downtown Chicago and back, and we had. 2 years ago, about 3,500 people did that. So,
kidding!
Wow.
Yeah. So it's 17 miles.
Yeah. For the 17 that
you start at. It's an out and back route. You start at campus and you come back.
Yeah. So you can walk it or jog it. Some of the hardcore vets took a backpack and jogged it. But to your point, it's still an ongoing process. The awareness of what is going on in the Middle East, especially in these more recent 15 years or so, is still coming around to the point that you can see this this flag behind me is a piece of artwork. It's at a little bit of a distance, but it's made of bottle caps. Mm-hmm. And the veteran who did that was shot down in Afghanistan. I think it was in 2014, and he survived. And he makes these for organizations across the country. For example, he's from Kansas City, and the Kansas City Chiefs, they have a wonderful bunch of rooms at the stadium. And he has these all across the nation. He does for Army, for all the services. So that's just one example I happen to have on topic for this. But to the question, it's still I think, ongoing. And there's certainly more visibility about it than I think 5 and 10 years ago.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, I mean, your trauma is something that And I mean, you know, not just veterans experience that, but you know, every human being experiences you know, trauma in their life, and I think it's incumbent upon whatever organization is, just be aware of the people you're hiring, whatever it is they might be bringing in with them. And then, you know, one of the things that we like to say is people over profits. And, because if you don't, you know, hone in on your people and nurture them and give them all the tools they need to succeed, you're not going to have any profits, right? You know, there's not going to be any profit at all, right? If we don't we don't take care of our folks. So, appreciate that. What you got coming up in the next 6 months? What are you excited about in the veteran space with what you do? What do you got coming up?
Sure. We have, what we have at the University of Chicago to speak to that group, we're planning, we have, one or maybe possibly two career development conferences. We've done in the past, for example, on the topic of technology. So we had five or six veterans who've gone through the transition, and now they're well into their careers. But we do a Zoom broadcast that allows all the veterans on campus, the alumni. And we also partner with other universities across the nation. And in this example, would be University of South Florida, Tulane, Wake Forest. There's others, and they can call it. They can dial into the Zoom and hear what veterans who worked at Microsoft or other technology companies that you would recognize and their process. Like you're talking to me today. How did you do it? What were the barriers? What were the issues that came across during your campaign to do the career transition and all these kind of things? So that's one thing. I do mentor 2 to 3 veterans every year. So and that comes also from here locally. Raymond James, for example, we have an annual golf outing that is veteran focused. That's coming up this September. I have multiple events that I have at the, I'm a VA member, and I use my VA here at Hines, Illinois. So I have stuff at the VA that I'm doing, this year. My daughter she has volunteered for the last 3 years. They're also, so kind of, it's kind of a family thing. I think I mentioned I have 3 teenagers at home. And my wife, who's a fourth grade teacher, every year I go into her classroom, and it's either at Veterans Day or Memorial Day, but we do a presentation where I come in my artillery dress blues, which I can still fit in.
Nice. Wow, that's impressive,
and the
sir. Kid,
yeah. Believe me, it takes some doing, but the kids prepare questions for me, and they also interview a family veteran, and they post these interviews in the classroom. And my wife, Mary Kelly, she's an angel. I think she probably would have been infantry though if she had served, and I think she wished she had. But she orchestrates this all in her fourth grade classroom. So those are a few of the events that I have coming on board. There's others too beyond that.
That's really cool, man. That's really cool.
So what does that mentoring program look like for you?
Yeah, so I will randomly come across somebody, whether it's at University of Chicago or maybe someone through a friend of a friend, often happens too, says, can you talk to this veteran? He or she is not sure what they want to do. They're considering, they might be considering consulting or whatever. So that I will have them come to me and I will assist them with the process. And we all know, like, the veteran mentality, and I think you guys can all appreciate this. When you go down the scroll hole, if you're in a direction, it's very hard. Once you determine where you're going to go, you're kind of gone, and then you're heading that direction, even though it might not be the best fit. And we find this through the mentoring process. The best thing we can do is to get veterans early on in that transition so they have information to make the decision where to choose, which directions to go, and importantly, which ones not to choose.
That is tremendously important.
Like if you don't want to travel, every day of the week and make good money, but you don't want to travel, you can't do consulting. Okay, so put that aside.
Yeah.
And by determining what you don't want to do, you can better focus and find what you do want to do. And I'm very, having worked in, you know, in the military, of course, Boeing as a shop floor supervisor, and worked in many aspects of finance. And I deal with people as an advisor and their careers constantly, to include my teenagers who I'm trying to get to college too, right? So I am constantly involved in career conversation. And I'm a great, to my own efforts, I'm a great conduit for people who are trying to decide where to go, Pat. Where would be the best way to approach this challenge? So,
I really like that litmus test of figure out what you don't want to do.
That's true.
Because how many times do we hear of people, you know, they grab the first thing smoking coming out the door of the military because it looked good, and they dangled a paycheck in front of them, and then they find out, like, oh my gosh, I hate this job. This dude is killing me, man, and it's not what I thought it was going to be. And I think asking that question, that's a great mentor-mentee relationship question, just to say, hey, what do you not want to do?
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. I struggle with myself when I came out, so, but yeah.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, what advice, aside from what not want to do, would you give those veterans that are transitioning?
To rephrase the question, what are things to avoid, pitfalls that you want to be aware of? Is that kind of?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah. First, I would say understand the process, the mindset. It's going to take time.
Yeah.
Two, also be under the mindset that with trying to discover where your choice is, that it's going to take a lot of effort of your due diligence to constantly reach out to people and find out from those you might want to have a conversation about what they're doing and for a career choice, have those discussions with them. Have a process that's organized so that you in your own mind can have it. You can have an ability to take this big wide open space and have some kind of a direction and something that makes sense to you, how you can organize what you're doing.
Yeah.
And reach out to as many people again. I'm saying that again, because that is critical. Reach out specifically to veterans.
Yeah.
I will say this, and what I do for a living, reaching out to a random person, you might have a 3 to 5, maybe 8% success rate. Reaching out to another veteran,
yep,
I think is like closer to 50 or 80.
Yeah.
You might be told no, but you're going to get a response.
Yeah.
Hey, so Pat, use the veteran world.
All right, brother. We are coming to the end of the show, and we are so thankful that you took time out of your life to spend with us. We'll be looking out for more from you. You've been listening to Putting the Pieces Back Together, presented by Purple Heart Homes. We will see you next week.
See you then.